Well, are there any questions or comments? Yes.
I'm just struck today by how easy it is to completely neglect the feeling tone and the effect it has. So easy to forget it. I'm wondering why it's so easy to overlook.
Well, I think it's kind of like, it's first, it's so natural. And secondly, it goes into very quickly into stories, commenting, etc., etc. So by the time we're over there, because at the beginning, that's what is interesting with the feeling tone, unless it's an intense one. At the beginning, it's quite faint, you know? And then, but still, it can have some effect. And then when you are there, you're so generally in the story of this here, that then you kind of don't realize it started there. And I think that's where the foundation of mindfulness, of being aware of the feeling tone, I think is why it's so important. Because in a way, it also, I feel it has different aspects, but one aspect, it really helps us to be here. It helps us to really, you know, be with our senses, with our experience. So I feel it kind of like add a certain anchoring dimension in this kind of the different condition we are experiencing now. So I think it does that aspect, and then also the other aspect of helping us over time to go less fast, less quickly, and kind of seeing, you know, do I just let it pass? Do I creatively engage and have a creative response?
So I notice sometimes when I am I'm aware of certain the bird singing, for instance, it could be pleasant or neutral, but then just maybe a second or so later, a thought comes up with a completely different feeling, so it could be unpleasant. So could you say something about the feeling tone of thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, this is something which, I was going to go a little bit in the afternoon, but we can also do it here. Because within the Buddhist framework, one of the sense is the mind, is the thinking. So in the same way, one moment there is no sound, next moment there is a sound, and there is a feeling tone upon that. In the same way, one moment we don't have a thought, next moment we have a thought. And actually, it's very interesting because at the level of what happened in the brain, a thought is just a little fiery in the brain. At one level, it's just kind of, you know, some biological stuff. And then another level, when you have a thought, I mean, you have thought which generally just neutral feeling tone upon the contact, and some thought, I mean, that really takes you is either in pleasant or some in really either unpleasant. And that, I think, is also a very important part of when, you know, even if we anchor in the breath, the body, or the sound, then we can also see what is it that distracts us. And so, like, often people are a little, they think in meditation they should not have thought, but that's not the idea. But the idea is actually, I have thought, what is the feeling tone of that? And so you can see very much the difference between having just like an idle thought of what am I going to eat for dinner? And unless you have some, you know, you're going to go out in a fantastic restaurant, dinner, okay, often it's relatively neutral. Unless you think, oh, I have to cook, I hate cooking, or oh, you think, great, I'm going to try this recipe, and then you can see, even just that, cooking for dinner, and you could go one, the middle, or the other. But sometimes you have some train of thought which have, that actually we go into because they actually produce a pleasant feeling to them. And one of a good example of that is daydreaming, which sometimes people can do in meditation. You sit there, And suddenly you start to think, if I was a great writer, or if I was a great whatever, and if I won the lottery, or whatever it might be one has. And then suddenly you go into this kind of movie in a way. And generally it's really pleasant. And that's why what is interesting with the with the daydreaming is that beginning, such nice. And then once you're in it, it's so nice because everything goes according to plan. And you tinker with it and you rearrange it, and then you hear the bell. Oh, already, but you. And that, I think, is kind of a type of thought which really is totally connected, I feel, with pleasant feeling too. But, and I think, in a way, we need to have hope in some way. Like once I was, many years ago, visiting a prisoner in South Africa, and I was talking about daydreaming. And with one prisoner, we were talking about the fact that he needed to daydream enough that it would give him kind of a bit of pleasant feeling tone, but not too much, that it would lead to frustration, and then he would get more unpleasant feeling tone. And I think that's the thing with the daydreaming. You have this kind of pleasant feeling tone, and then when you come back to reality where things don't necessarily go according to plan, then there can be more frustration, but again, the contrast. So one sometimes has to be careful of the function of imagination when it really inspires us, and when it becomes daydreaming and then it frustrates us. So that's very interesting with that daydreaming, how it feels in terms of that. Or one very good example is rumination. You know, you sit there, and I hope you are relatively fine sitting here. And then you sit there, and suddenly a memory or whatever it is, a word somebody said 2 years ago, they said this. How could they say this? You know? And then immediately you feel very unpleasant feeling tone just from that. See? And then generally you can often go and plot revenge, and that becomes pleasant. Though it might not be very compassionate. And so that's a very interesting one, that rumination. Or fantasizing. Fantasizing is when you have a little that... Does it start by a thought, or does it start by a feeling tone? This is hard to know, a little complex. But suddenly, it's kind of this little funny, unpleasant, fearful feeling. What if this happened? Or what if this has happened while I'm sitting here? You know? And then you can really go into often catastrophizing. You know, but this happened, and that happened, and I come back to the house, and it's totally flooded, and, or whatever you might go into. And that's also... You know, you suddenly something come up. And so to see totally, I think, in a way, thoughts are very, you know, empty. They're very kind of light spark. And they can have such an impact in terms of feeling tone. And then how then it's really kind of, you know, the whole chain reaction. You know. Yeah.
I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on whether we should try and be more in the pleasant side of it. Because I was just observing, for example, when I was sitting and I started to get pins and needles in my leg, and that was unpleasant for quite a while. And then when I moved my leg, then the pins and needles went, so it was pleasant for a very short amount of time and then went to neutral. But then I decided to make myself think more about how I'm much more comfortable now, I don't have pins and needles, and sort of try to maintain the positive. And it happened with a couple of other things. And I'm just wondering, is that a good level to try and be more positive in terms of trying to be more positive overall, rather than trying to think of the big things, or is it just more observing?
I think, you know, it's an important point to see that it's kind of two things are happening with this. One thing is that, in a way, there is a slightly self-perpetuating mechanism, a little bit kind of like a kind of auto-feeding mechanism. So if you have unpleasant feeling tone, then you might start to kind of, in a way, be too focused on that, and then just start to see all the different things creating unpleasant feeling tone. And then it just kind of, in a way, amplifies that way. The same way that if you have, you know, like a good moment, good time in your life, and then it's easy to see other good things in your life, in people. So, you know, like somebody say, everything is terrible, or something say, oh, things are fantastic. So each has a tendency to auto-feed. So just to be a little aware of that, because especially with the negative, if it's unpleasant and we're kind of feeding more and more and more, then it will be harder, in a way, after a while to come back to neutral. So we have to be a little careful how we feed that. Then, since they have done study, that seemingly we have a little more, because you see, pleasant feeling tone, we take them for granted. You know, that's the way it should be most of the time. Neutral, okay, but it's better if it's pleasant. So at one level, we kind of slant it toward wanting this. And so in contrast, the unpleasant is more unpleasant because it should be like this. So we are kind of this strange, unbalanced effect, which means we are a little more biased toward unpleasant, actually. And so if we bias that way, then yes, I would say it's important to try to redress the balance. And I will nearly say be as focused on the unpleasant as the pleasant. But also to see for ourselves, what is it that creates unpleasant and do I need to continue with it? I mean, sometimes we can't help it. But sometimes maybe we don't need to continue with that. In the same way that if it's sometimes pleasant, yeah, we would actually intentionally continue to cultivate that, because then it would balance out when it's unpleasant. And so we then would have a more balanced way to be with all the different ones. So I would say it depends on condition. Like, I would not make it too artificial. I am feeling terrible, but I am feeling great. But more actually at the level of experience, what is it that helps me to uplift the mood a little bit? I think that sometimes can be kind of useful to see. You know, what is it that helps me? Then also when there is something difficult, what is it that helps me, in a way, to be with it, to creatively engage with it? So I would say, yeah, we can, in a way, play a little bit. I mean, I think one of the easy things we can do, if we kind of sometimes, you know, we don't feel really good, you go just go and see a comedy, and then it kind of like uplifts you, if it's a good one, of course, it kind of really uplifts you. You feel, oh yeah. Or you go and see a film and it inspires you and say, oh yeah. It's kind of like shift a little, because sometimes we can be stuck a little in some of the feeling tone. So balance with yes, and play with it also, I think. Yes?
Just wondering if you could explain a little bit more what you meant by creative response to feeling tone. Maybe it's exactly what you were just saying.
Well, I think the first thing is if we become more aware of them, then first thing will be less tendency to comment, amplify, associate, which I think happens very fast with feeling tone. So that by itself, I would say, to be more aware of them, but not in a self-conscious way, that what is this feeling tone? You know, I don't see anything. Or just kind of, what is it to a small degree I can be aware of? And creative engagement is in terms of, can I not amplify? Because I think we amplify very fast, you know, because especially with the unpleasant, we amplify, you know, either if it's unpleasant for ourselves, or even we can notice if somebody, because of certain circumstances, has an unpleasant feeling too. And if we don't have enough stability and balance, we can easily too start to feel really unpleasant feeling too, which is fine, fair enough, because that suffering makes us feel unpleasant. Because it's suffering, I empathize with the suffering, so I will feel it a bit too. But to what degree? That's the thing we have to be careful. To what degree? So that thing, that's where there is this importance on stability and balance. So let's, for example, somebody experience a really difficult feeling tone. How can I feel some too, but within a wider framework? Or if something happened to me, which is really unpleasant, how can I experience it without amplifying it? Like, for example, I mean, I just taught a week retreat at Gaia House, and it was a Zen retreat, and so the sitting is a little more intense than normal. And so the first sitting in the morning, you know, we had 35, and 10 minutes walking. So the first one was okay. Second one, I started to have this pain in my back. Third one, woo. And so I was starting to feel, I mean, this was unpleasant feeling too. And I could see my mind going, is it going to be like this the whole time? And then, you know, how am I going to survive, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, I just, that's what's happening. That's what's happening. Let's see what happens. And every day, it was the same. It was weird. And by the afternoon, I did not have it. Then the next morning, I had it again. So it was really fascinating to see, I have this sensation. It's relatively unpleasant, but then it passes. So I think, in a way, the creative engagement is also to see, I am not stuck. Because the problem when we have especially an intense, unpleasant feeling too, then the tendency to think is that we can't see anything else and we think this is going to last forever. So immediately we add to that. And so the thing is to see, I am feeling this because of certain conditions, and this is also going to change at some point in some way. So that's part of the creative engagement. Not just, I think when we're aware of the feeling tone, that's one thing, but then there is also what we bring to that creative awareness, which is this awareness of conditionality and this awareness of change. And so basically I would say, in terms of the feeling tone, part of the creative engagement is a question, how long is this going to last? And like me with the back, it was gone by the afternoon, so it's okay. I mean, if it continue, then maybe I have to do something about it, if it kind of increases, so it's also.
Yes, what I noticed is that there were very few totally neutral experiences. So these experiences that I thought were neutral, when I looked at them a little bit with a magnifying glass, had a little bit of an element of positive or negative. So then they held a little bit more interest in me. So I don't know, just to say that is interesting.
So people have very different ideas about the neutral. For example, my husband, Stephen, who is also teaches, and he believes neutral don't exist. Either they go pleasant or they're unpleasant. Which, he has a point. But personally, I think it's interesting in terms of, back to what the nun said, if we understand it, it becomes pleasant. If we don't, it becomes unpleasant. You know, and a lot of it is about that. And so we can see the shift, I think, with the neutral, when nothing is happening. Of course, but sometimes I feel it's just also restful. But then you could say, restful is pleasant. You know, I mean, it's true. It's a very shifty one. But I think it's interesting, principally in terms of the baseline. To me, in terms of the idea of the baseline, in terms of that, if we realize that the neutral is a baseline, then we're going to look at the ups and downs in a different way. Instead of thinking I'm always down or I'm always up, you can see that you shift. And I think it seems to me that for a healthy way of feeling about ourselves, we generally need to go back to the baseline. Like we go up and we go back to the baseline. We go down and we go back to the baseline. And to me this is something which is quite important to rest the body and mind. And so when you're really down and you can't go up back to the baseline, this is very difficult because then you become often hypersensitive. Or if you go too much up actually in pleasant and there is lots of excitation, then again, at some point generally there is a crash from that. So I think in terms of experience, I totally agree that often it's kind of very shifty there. But in terms of idea, I think it's important to see that, you know, we go back to the neutral, then you go up or down, and that I think it's very, for our health, it's very important to be able to go back to the baseline, to find a way to do that. And I think in a way, possibly meditation is one way to do that in a healthy way. Yes.
I can see the point of using pleasant and unpleasant as opposed to I like it or I don't like it. It becomes less self-centered. But I find it's nearer home to rather than pleasant and unpleasant say I like this or I don't like that. Because sometimes I know in a lecture you get somebody coming up saying something about the lecture, they would say, I found your lecture very interesting. Now, that could mean loads of things, you know, there could even be sarcasm there. but the person would be more real, more honest by saying, I didn't like your lecture at all. So I find it's only, it hits nearer to the body. But that's the point of saying pleasant, unpleasant, it's left self-centered.
Yeah, no, I think you have a very good point. It's kind of just in terms of a little bit explaining the theory, but in terms of the experience, it's generally what you described. I like it, I don't like it. I have learned over time to like it, I have learned over time to not like it. So I think not totally. I mean, I had a friend in Korea. In the old days, they did not they did not eat cheese. They never eaten cheese, so they did not know what it was. And so they felt it was very smelly and, I mean, terrible stuff. So I had a friend who decided to tame cheese. So every day he ate a little bit of cheese. And he said by the end of 1 or 2 weeks, it was okay. So it moved from unpleasant to neutral. So yeah, no, I would totally agree that actually it's very much about I like, I don't like, but it's very interesting how we have such a quick tendency to I like this, I don't like that. So I think it's in a way kind of a way to look at this, how it's so quick. It's kind of like, as the Buddha says, it's just a function we have. There is contact and there is a feeling tone, which is generally I like, I don't like, totally. And so it's a kind of very interesting. Yes?
I suppose one of the things I noticed, as well as unpleasant and pleasant, was intensity. So, you know, you're talking about neutral. For me, neutral is probably less intense. So, for example, I started looking at things in the walking meditation. I mean, I was looking at things, but I started being aware. And suddenly the green leaves on the tree was very intense in a way it hadn't been 5 minutes earlier. But that also has a kind of parallel. It's a bit like, you know, in times of my life when I've been terribly unhappy, then suddenly I could be terribly uplifting by music or something because it's the intensity being worked in. Does that make any sense?
No, this is also what the next thing, in a way, to look at is the changing nature of it. And to see, like what I was talking in terms of contrast, you know, like if you have intense up or intense down, when it passes, the contrast And what happened with the contrast is also very interesting.
And there's something that the up and the down have in common. In terms
of
intensity.
I mean,
that for me is helpful.
Because sometimes we rather be intense than neutral. So then, if you cannot be intense up, then I'll be intense down. But
and sometimes I crave intensity, and it doesn't feel entirely healthy.
Exactly. So that's something to look at in terms of intensity. And how are we with when there is not much intensity, which is relatively neutral? So that's back to the understanding, you know, because I think, in a way, is how part of this talking about the neutral feeling, Tony, is how can I be with it? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you live in the countryside and you have a very quiet life, then actually you know generally that feeling very well. But if you live in a town, in a metropolis like London, I mean, there is lots of intensity. You know, the sound, the traffic, I mean, all kinds of things. And so I think it's kind of interesting what that does.
And it's like with the sound today, the first thing I was aware of was other people coughing or shuffling. And I thought, this is pleasant because I'm supposed to be focusing on sound and there is some. Whereas in other occasions, if I'm supposed to be focusing on the body or my own breath, and somebody next to me drops something or sneezes, it's unpleasant. So there's a kind of context.
Exactly, exactly. That's why, you see, to also look at the intensity, I think, and to look how we are with intensity, how, because some people have the opposite. They really cannot be with intensity. It's really not good for them. So then they're looking for neutral. And then something they cannot find it. So there is also that. And also totally, to me, that's what is fascinating is in terms of context. Because we have a tendency to think things are fixed. So we often have a tendency to think it's in the object. It's not me, it's in the object. Back to I like, I don't like. So what it shows us is that, yeah, it's context a lot of the time. You know, and I have the same thing when I'm doing the listening meditation, then I'm very happy if there are noise. Sounds, noise, because, you know, there's something to work with. So, and then you see in other contexts, then it would be different. Yeah.
I found it very interesting when you were saying about sort of finding this kind of baseline, how just in the very act of paying attention, that's already drawing away from a sort of possibly a numbness or just a caught upness in one's own thinking, and suddenly just this act of awareness, simple act of focusing on listening and the breathing, just brings back into this sort of baseline place. That for me would in itself already
You see, because this is something I have not mentioned, because I wanted to see, would you notice it? The fact that also the mindfulness has a feeling tone. So are you aware? I mean, that's why I was caught for a long time. I was looking for this feeling tone, but actually because I was focusing on the feeling tone of the awareness, it was fairly neutral. So then it becomes interesting to see the contact itself with the thing, and if I am aware of the contact. And often that shifted, as you described, because then the feeling tone, most of the time of the awareness, will be relatively neutral. Though it can go up and down too, but it's very interesting that if you cultivate this caring, careful mindfulness, then it brings something to the experience itself. So that can, of course, also change the feeling tone. So it's interesting, am I aware of the feeling tone of the awareness, or am I aware of the contact itself? That's something also we can explore.
Suddenly, you can, the bird song's happening all the time, possibly. Suddenly you really hear it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find that a London experience. So, you know, am I not hearing it? And suddenly pausing, and the bird song is wonderful.
Yeah, exactly, it changes. it changes. So that's something we can notice. What is it I'm looking at? Or I'm not looking at anything. It's because sometimes we are a little kind of mindless. So what happened there? Then actually this is also one thing, that we have ears, somebody talks to us. We look in the right direction. We have ears, functional. And they say something and we think about something totally else. And when they say, what do you think? You have no idea what they say. So that also is interesting in terms of the awareness. What happens if there is awareness or not awareness? And then what that might do with the feeling too, as well. But we have to stop here now. So now there is going to be 30 minutes of walking meditation. And so again, in silence.